Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
We're off to Botswana tonight for an African adventure. The country is bordered by South Africa to the south and east, by Namibia to the west, and by Zimbabwe to the east. The massive Kalahari Desert covers more than 70% of Botswana and spans about 900,000 square kilometres, touching nine African countries. Botswana is also home to the famous Okavango Delta, the largest inland delta in the world and one of the prime sites ever to see African wildlife. Travel writer Uta Yonker has just returned from Botswana and joins us again on the program. Uta, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
What a pleasure to be back with you, Phil.
Lucky you, you would have seen some incredible sights. The Okavango Delta is in Botswana, but then again, you better tell us about this because Botswana is a landlocked country. It's not on the coast, so there's no river flowing into the sea and accompanying delta, is it? It's an inland delta.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky concept to get your head around because there's this vast section of the country that every year gets inundated with massive amounts of water. On average, they say 11 cubic kilometres of water. So it pours in...
Where from?
From Angola.
Right.
So Angola gets the rains, the rivers rise, and it floods down. And it's very sweet. They all sort of know what's happening in Angola. They go, oh, yeah, the water's in Angola now. It'll be here in about 2 weeks, you know, like it's a train.
Okay.
And it all flows in. And so you've got the riverbed, but you've got these vast sort of marshy, swampy areas. And so for a couple of months, this entire landscape is underwater and everything just flourishes. And then eventually it just all evaporates. It doesn't drain out. It just evaporates. And so you can come either when it's the full flight wet season, and what you're largely doing is you've got this very watery landscape with these big sort of lush green tree-covered islands, as it were, where you go to see the game. Or if you come in the drier season, which is where I went in the drier season this time, I've done the wet before too. So in the drier season, you've got all this extra land to cover, and the islands are these sort of hillocks. And you know that when the rains come, those will be the only things left protruding from the landscape. But it's even now before the rains are there, you'll see things that you wouldn't normally see on safari. So for one thing, I saw a pelican sitting in a tree, which I didn't know pelicans could sit in trees. I was pretty impressed by that. But, you know, there's inland pelicans that come in time for the rains. Oh, no, sorry, not the rains, the waters.
Mm-hmm.
And that pelican was obviously just likes to get there early and make sure he doesn't miss a second of it. And it's also the only place, I've done a lot of safari right throughout Africa. It's the only place I've ever been where you are surrounded by palm trees, which are not typical safari vegetation.
No, not
you
at
know,
all.
You expect more savanna or maybe a bit of riverine forest. But again, and it's apparently the elephants that come down from Angola as part of their migration, because there's a lot of animals there every time of year, but then there's even more during the wet season. Yeah, and they eat these particular sort of the seeds of these particular palms up north, and then they wander down and do
So is the what's the best time to go if you wanted to see animals, which is why I guess people are going, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter. You will see animals all around. The most popular season, the high season, is the wet season because the reason that is appealing to a lot of people is because there is less land mass sticking out.
Right.
So you know where the animals are going to be.
Oh, okay, because the animals have had to seek higher ground, and so they're
exactly the animals are on the higher ground. But the downside of that is A, it's more expensive, and B, it's more crowded. Mm. Now, in the season that I went, we saw, which was right now, pretty much everything every day. There wasn't a day when we didn't see lions or cheetahs or leopards. We saw plenty of elephant and hippos and hyena. We saw rhinos. So there's a lot of game around. And the delightful thing about this time of year that I really enjoy, the cubs are a bit bigger. So when the cubs are born, they're tiny, they stay in the den, you don't see them. When the cubs are sort of getting around closer to 6 months, that's when they start to be out and about and more active. And, you know, cubs are adorable. Everyone loves a cub. And they're unpredictable. They're so much fun. We had some wild dog cubs, which was a thrill anyway, because wild dogs are pretty rare. And Botswana is one of the best places to go see them. Mm-hmm. And they were, this is a particular species. So it's not just dogs that have gone wild. There is a species called the African wild dog that is unlike anything else you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we found these cubs and they were just, one of them was mesmerized with us and just kept walking back and forward, looking at us intrigued. Another one was trying to eat the safari vehicle. You know, it was just going, I wonder if this tastes good. So there's, you know, there's upsides to everything. Mm.
The two species that are said to be reshaping the landscape are the biggest and the smallest, elephants and also termites. How so?
It's hilarious. So elephants, you may know, play a big part in shaping any sort of safari landscape, goes without going, along with hippos. They're usually called the bulldozers of the bush because they just, you know, an elephant is, the first time you see an elephant in action, you go, oh my God, you're a force of destruction, because they'll just rip things off. They'll barge past and knock over small trees, you know. Mm. But by doing that, you know, even if they're uprooting roots or anything like that that looks damaging, that's creating a whole new habitat for a whole range of the things at the bottom of the food chain, which are the insects, which then brings more of the small mammals and the birds, and which brings more of the predators. So it's this cycle that keeps going. And particularly because this is such a watery landscape, so it's more, I guess you could call it more malleable. If it's much easier to make a trail through any kind of landscape if it's underwater for a good chunk of the year, right? There's less resistance. It's less solid. So they are in essence, the elephants are carving out new channels almost every year and sort of keeping this environment alive and living and changing, so that all these populations of species at every level have new things to find and explore and eat. And on at the other end of the spectrum, if you have a good guide, you're going to fall in love with every species you encounter, and that includes termites. I am now in love with termites.
So I am certainly not. They're eating my house at the moment, but anyway.
Well, give them a ticket to Botswana because they're quite handy.
This Botswana, we're with Uta Yunker, and we're in Botswana in the Okavango Delta, which is the place in Africa to see wild game. Because yes, all the things we associate with Africa, the rhinos, the hippos, elephants, giraffe. Are there giraffe there?
Giraffe, zebra, more antelope than you can poke a stick at.
Wow, yeah, it's because Botswana has pioneered this high value, low numbers tourism model, haven't they? It's which is successful. It's not inexpensive to go. Tell us about that, and why does it work so successfully?
Well, it's a deliberate decision they made. Botswana's quite a small country with quite a small, well, not quite a small government, quite a stable government. Mm. And they made the smart decision some years ago and said, look, we really want to protect what we've got here. How do we need the income from tourism. How do we manage this for the best result? And they decided, okay, so what we want is we want fewer tourists who are going to spend more money. So instead of just unleashing a horde of safari camps across the country, they went, we want to pitch the safari camps to a higher level to get people who will spend more money that will flow back into the community and keep the numbers low, so there's less impact on the wildlife, on the land, on the resources. And that's a model that a lot of smaller countries are starting to follow. So somewhere like Bhutan, which, you know, really started opening up to tourism about a decade ago, they very deliberately looked at models around the world and went, you know what? Botswana knows what they're doing, and they followed the same path. So, and it's really noticeable when you go to Botswana how the staff at the lodges, the staff at the airports, the people you meet wherever you go, are actually, they are loving tourists. You never, in some destinations, you get the feeling that you need to keep an eye out because someone's going to try and fleece you at some stage. Doesn't happen. They already know that anyone who comes is contributing in a big way. And right. So there's a really warm welcome.
Okay. So the setup is what? You go to a camp, and then from there, guides take you out in vehicles and you see animals. Is that the general setup?
So most people will do two or three different camps just to have a couple of experiences. You usually do about 2 to 3 nights in each one.
Right. How long should you go for, do you think?
How long's a piece of string?
A week?
Yeah. I actually think you don't need to do much longer than a week because, A, in the Delta, you're going to see a lot. And B, I mean, it sounds silly because safari is basically going out twice a day and sitting in a vehicle and looking at animals.
Yeah, yeah.
Philip, it's really tiring. Yeah. Quite seriously, because the thing is, you do start very early, right?
Yeah.
You're probably, depending on where in the season you are, you're probably riding out those gates of the camp at 6 a.m. You will spend a couple of hours driving around. You'll stop for morning tea to stretch your legs at some point. And then the evening drive starts at about 4:30. And they say you come back at 7:30, but we were coming back at 8:30 because there was so much to see.
And you come back to well-catered meals, I can imagine.
Absolutely. Oh, look, you will be tired, but you will be fat and happy.
Yeah.
you are very, very well fed. And I mean, morning game drives are enchanting too, but the special pleasure of the afternoon game drive is you do a bit of driving, you have your sundowner drinks, and then the trip home, which is never rushed, is done at night, and it's done with spotlighting. And so the idea is that you get to see the animals that are out at night. And that may be some species you see during the day, but they're more active at night. For instance, lion. If you see a lion during the day, they're going to be resting in the shade, lolling about, hopefully with big fat bellies because they've just eaten. And they're going to be beautiful, but they're not going to do much. If you want to see lions prowling, that will be in the evening,
right?
And that's really special. But then there's also species, more random species, things most of us sort of don't hear of unless we actually go to Africa. Bat-eared foxes, there's other who are gorgeous. They're little insect eaters and they're hyper alert. Their little heads are always twitching as they watch all the little insects and work out which ones are worth eating. There's also smaller cat species like serval and African wildcats, which are nocturnal, which you will never see otherwise. The big, beautiful African owls, like the spotted eagle owl, is an amazing beast. And that's another one you'll only see at night. So you get a double whammy in the evening game drive.
Well, yes, it's a real bucket list thing, isn't it? As I said, it's not inexpensive, so don't think this is a bargain holiday because it won't be. But it's one worth saving for. It definitely is one worth saving for. But people say I've not ever been, but Ute has been our guide tonight. Thank you very much for taking us to the Okavango Delta.
It's been a real pleasure.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.